The number one factor that impacts integration these days is culture, surprisingly or not surprisingly. So one of the stats that's been floating around for years is that probably 70% of the companies do not achieve the value expected from the deal because of culture.
You're busy, we know. We cut through the BS and give you straight talk advice whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just starting out. Our Small Business Big Insights podcast dives straight to the point on key topics and features interviews with industry experts and successful small business owners who share their deep insights. Tune in each month to gain new ideas and inspiration for your own small business. Welcome to the Small Business Big Insights podcast. So excited to share this episode today with some big insights from Colleen Kelly, who helps us better understand mergers and acquisitions for small businesses. And we help you understand how this impacts your small business. I invite you right now to follow our podcast on your podcast provider of choice so you don't miss out on any of our upcoming episodes. Also, give us a review and help spread the message. Help us know how we're doing. So, today we've got Colleen Kelly. Colleen is president of Stratford Group and leads the management consulting business unit. This includes the business scale-up, the strategic planning, mergers and acquisitions, and the integrations group, which we're going to go through later today. Colleen is a seasoned executive and board director with over 30 years of experience in finance, supply chain, and manufacturing in the high-tech industry. She's an engaging leader with substantive skill in profit and loss management. She also brings significant experience in mergers and acquisition activities, as well as leading organizations through substantial transformations. Colleen is also a CPA, and she started her career at Nortel. She decided to spend 10 years in the contract manufacturing industry. There, she became heavily involved in M&A and integration activities. We're lucky enough to have Colleen with us here today. Welcome.
Thanks, Eric. Happy to be here.
Yeah, let's get straight to it. So first of all, lots of small business owners right now are basically trying to survive. And are mergers and acquisitions really for them?
I think mergers and acquisitions are a great option or strategy for businesses. And there's no reason why this doesn't apply to small and medium-sized businesses. If you think about organizations and with their growth strategies, M&A is a really effective strategic lever to accelerate that growth.
Okay. And I guess like for business owners or businesses that might be losing money now, does that become less of an opportunity or is that more of an opportunity for them?
Businesses that are losing money.
Like if there's a business owner right now that might be, you know, they're not making losing money themselves, like on an ongoing basis. And they're kind of like thinking about mergers and acquisitions as kind of a strategy to maybe kind of get out of losing money or kind of like part of their expansion plan. Like, is that still kind of viable for them if they're currently kind of losing money?
And are you talking, sorry, from the buyer, from the seller perspective or both?
Well, I guess from the buyer perspective. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, when you think about your strategy, there's lots of reasons why you want to do the M&A, right? Or an acquisition. So what are those strategic drivers? So it could be the top line. It could be revenue growth. It could be the profitability. Maybe you're looking for a business model that is more profitable than you have. So perhaps a recurring revenue model, something like that, right? So there's no reason trying to deal with the profitability is not a reason not to, you know, to use the M&A, just like it's whether you're buying the technology or you're trying to get talent, et cetera.
Right.
So I think it's just a factor. It's a factor.
Yeah, it's a factor, but it's not a detrimental factor because in essence, like when you're buying the business, a lot of it is like you're borrowing based on the profitability of the business that you're buying or based on the, you know, the metrics of the organization that you are buying. So that, yeah, that's
exactly
that's interesting. And I guess like speaking of reasons or like kind of the strategic side of things, like what are some of the, I guess, good strategic reasons that a small or medium sized business might want to consider doing an acquisition of another company?
Yeah, and there's multiple reasons, and it really depends on the company. But I think at a very high level, what you want to think about is what your strategy and where you're going. And from there, then you understand your gaps. And the question is, should you develop that organically, or should you acquire that? And perhaps the acquisition strategy is a better, mechanism to acquire or to close that gap. So a gap could be, and I kind of was just touching on some of this. It could be technology, right? There's a specific technology. Instead of trying to figure it out yourself, you go buy a company that has that. It could be the business model. Often it's geographic expansion. So if you want to expand into Europe or Asia, other types of regions, certainly an acquisition is a much easier way than trying to do it from the ground up. Acquiring talent is a big driver these days, right? With our scarce resources and people trying to acquire talent, get talent, acquiring it is really a good way to do that. Other things could be opening a new market, for example, not even maybe a different market vertical, for example, things like that. So there's lots of angles or strategic drivers. I think the key point is make sure it's in alignment with your strategic goals and your strategic plan. Don't do M&A for the sake of M&A. Make sure it's got a purpose that ties to your strategy.
Yeah, and I know you've kind of publicly talked about how, the strategy of like why you're doing this is kind of like more important than just getting a deal on your desk and then evaluating it without having an underlying strategy. So, yeah, I think we'll get more into that for sure. I know that I've had some clients approach us like as an accountant, and they tell me that, it's great and all to try and buy some businesses, but how do people come up with money to even buy a business, right? And I can explain a little bit, like from what I've seen as an accountant for our audience. Like basically, our team at ZenBooks, we help people with their finances and taxes, and so we've seen a lot of people use like a leveraged buyout, where basically like they are basically getting some financing based on the EBITDA or the net income, basically modified net income of the business that they're buying. So they can often get like 80 to 100% loan to value on that, and then basically repay the purchase price over, 5, 7 years, right? So that's a big one. The other one was like basically vendor takebacks, right? So whoever's selling the business might actually just lend you the money for the next couple of years. And then that way you don't need to have like, $1 million or $500,000 in the bank account to buy a business. Like they'll happily lend it to you in some cases, because it also offsets on some tax benefits. You can defer and use some capital gains reserves. I've also seen some small businesses use share exchange. So they actually buy the business, but in exchange, they give part of their own shares to the other business, right? It's also a prime time to get external investors. So if you want a money partner to basically be the person who comes in, they put up the money, you do the management, and maybe it's an industry that you're comfortable in, that you're trying to partner up with someone, and basically maybe they have extra money and they get like an 8%, 10% return or whatever, and you manage the business, and so I think these are kind of like just out of the box kind of thinking. I think that, essentially one of the other things that I come across recently was there was one situation where they bought a business, and then the person who bought the business, after they owned the business, now they went out and they got financing on some of the assets that the business had. And so essentially like on some of the equipment that they had, and basically got their money back on the acquisition, or a lot of it anyway, not all of it, but a good part of it. And so it's kind of like a good way to basically finance your purchase with the assets of the business that you're actually going to be acquiring, right? So there's lots of scenarios and that we've kind of come across. So typically on all kinds of businesses, the valuations can vary, but we've seen a lot of like 5 to 7 year periods by just basically kind of borrowing. So any kind of thoughts on that, Colleen, or like anything that you've seen on like how business owners can even just make this happen from a money perspective?
Yeah, certainly access to capital is one of the challenges to any M&A deal. But frankly, it's kind of the same problem whether you're small or medium-sized organization or a large thing or a large company. So the methods that you've mentioned are all levers to access capital. And often there's combination deals too. I mean, you see that quite a bit, right? So it's a little bit of cash, it's a little bit of leverage buyout, it's a little bit of, this, so it's all doable. And sometimes it takes some creativity, but it probably is where you need a little bit of help too, right?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, you know, like we referred to earlier, there's a kind of whole process to even buying a business, right? And it doesn't just start with like getting an offer on your desk from someone that's selling their business and then evaluating it. There's kind of like a whole flow, right? Kind of walk us through what you've seen as kind of like the process when you start to think about maybe buying a business. What are the steps that business owners should follow?
Yeah, there's kind of a generic M&A process that I think is applicable to both a buyer and seller. The implications are a little bit different whether you're on the buy side or the sell side, but the process obviously is the same. And at a very high level, it's four steps. We like to bubble up into four steps. So the first one is the strategy. So what is your strategic, which we kind of talked about earlier, what is your strategic objectives that you're trying to achieve through the acquisition? From there, you go into essentially a deal flow. So you try and find the targets and the companies that would be potential targets to achieve that strategy. Then there's a, you know, a bit of a qualification that happens at that stage. Once you move from that point, you then essentially go into due diligence. So that's a deeper dive. So now you've got a pretty close target, you know, potential acquisition target. You're feeling good about it. And now you want to go deep. You want to go under the tent, start to look at things and understand if there's any red flags, any gotchas in there. And then finally, you move into the integration. The integration starts effectively, like officially, once the purchase agreement has been signed. Having said that, what we've learned over the years is that integration is fairly complex. And so if you break that down into kind of two or three steps, I would say there's pre-integration, which is really starts to happen in the due diligence, kind of at the end of the due diligence phase. You start to talk about what is the integration strategy. Following integration, we always like to have a post-integration review as well. So certainly a lessons learned when you do M&A is really good information, particularly if you're going to do this on a serial basis. So right. At a high level, four big steps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think that for a lot of like entrepreneurs that are, you know, trying to grow their business, doing their thing, I think the fun part can be the strategy and like deal flow and whatnot. But then I think some business owners kind of forget the whole due diligence, pre-integration, integration, maybe even post-integration, that is really what kind of like triggers if the deal's actually going to be successful or not, right? Because it could have like really good deal on paper, but then if it doesn't actually integrate properly, if you can't actually bring that new business that you're buying properly into your existing business, it's going to flop, you know? And so what have you seen, you know, as being one of the bigger issues that people have when they are buying a business? Like, what do they most often, let's say, regret?
Yeah, I think there's a few elements to this question. So if you think about the front end of it, certainly the strategy and the deal flow. Often I find that the strategy is not well thought out. So like I mentioned earlier, people are doing M&A or acquisitions for the sake of doing acquisitions. And so without a well thought strategy, you may just buy anything, right? And so, and then, you know, like anything, if it's not thought through well, it's certainly not going to get the value that you expected. So not enough planning at the beginning, causes a lot of angst at the back end. And the other part of that front piece is that, to your point, that's kind of a lot of fun, right? Figuring out the strategy, figuring out the targets, talking to people, figuring out where you're going to do the deal. At this point, people start to get deal fever. CEOs in particular, they can get deal fever. They get excited. They want to buy this company. Mm-hmm. They start to become not objective. So into the second half, if you will, I have seen a lot of companies see flags at due diligence and they ignore them. And they say, oh, we can overcome that. Oh, we overcome that, because they really want to buy this company, right? And so they lose objectivity and they don't recognize those flags or they don't respect them, I guess. So I think that the due diligence isn't done well enough and often, because from an emotional perspective, they're just trying to get this along those phases so that they can get over the line. So that's kind of in the front end. At the back end, there's just the integration is just quite a challenging piece of it. And I think one of the biggest challenges that I've seen is that people don't understand their integration strategy before they go into that phase. And frankly, they don't even actually make the right integration strategy. So there's a lot of principles around integration that people don't understand. And what happens is people learn those mistakes the hard way. So they just think they can integrate the company. And then once you get into it, you realize it's complex and they make lots of mistakes. So like, for example, one big mistake would be speed. So typically in an integration, our principle is, you know, you want to go quickly. It's very much like ripping up a Band-Aid. Intuitively, often you hear people say, oh, let's just leave the companies alone for a while and then we'll figure out what to do. And in fact, that works against you, that strategy. So just, I think understanding integration, people don't really understand, or organizations, unless they've been through it, really don't understand integration and how to do it well. What happens at integration is that's really where the rubber hits the road, right? So, you have objectives from this deal and now you want to really extract the value that you expected from the deal. And if you don't execute your integration properly, the whole benefit is at risk, right? And the number one factor that impacts integration these days is culture, surprisingly or not surprisingly. So one of the stats that's been floating around for years is that probably 70% of the companies do not achieve the value expected from the deal because of culture.
Wow.
Which is pretty powerful.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
shocking.
But
true. And I'll give you an example of this. So if you have a large organization that buys a startup, mm-hmm. and you can, you know, a large organization has processes, they have approval levels, there's bureaucracy, you know, decision makers have to go through multiple layers. If you're a startup, you're a CEO, you've been making all the decisions, and now you have to go into a company and you have to go through three layers of approval. Like, it can get very frustrating very quickly. And that's what I mean, things like that around culture that I don't, mm-hmm. you know, people don't, I think they underestimate them.
Yeah. And I guess the integration phase and the due diligence phase that, like you're saying, is often kind of overlooked a little bit. Is that, I guess, as a two-part question, is that kind of like what you, I guess, do as a professional? And the second part is like, what does everyone in the industry kind of do to help people that are buying businesses? Because I know there's brokers, there's M&A consultants, there's accountants, there's lawyers. And so kind of like, what do you do within the industry? And what does everyone do within the industry?
That's a great question. So, I mean, it's important to surround yourself with experts that can help you in an acquisition. If I break it down, an M&A advisor is essentially just that. They are a person, just that, but it's important. So they can help you through the entire process, end to end, and they're really working on your behalf. They're helping you develop your pitch decks. They're helping you remain objective. They're helping you negotiate. Like, all along the process, they're helping you.
Right.
So that's kind of what an advisor does. A broker or an investment banker is really is the group or person that's going to really help you broker that deal. So they will typically run a process. So if you wanted to be for sale, you would go to an investment banker or to a broker, and they would put out a call saying that this company, whether it's, you know, it can be in confidence, obviously, or an open, and put it out to the market that this company is for sale, and they can run that process, find buyers, qualify them, negotiate the deal, et cetera, help you with your valuations, like all that type of stuff, and help you get over the deal. They tend to stop once the deal is over. And so they're not typically focused on the integration. So that is kind of where that, you know, you got a little bit of a gap, and where an advisor, an M&A person can kind of fill that gap for you. You still need your accountants, you know, to help with all your financial accounting, analysis, due diligence, you know, those types of things, tax planning, etc. And you also need the lawyers for the legal aspects, obviously, right? So they all play a role. But you just have to understand kind of where their lanes are and where their strengths are. I think also with the investment bankers or the brokers, where they do provide value is their relationships. So they tend to have good relationships in those certain industries, and so that they can bring value, you know, potential buyers to you. So those are the kind of the four groups, if you want to call it that, or the types of resources to help you. Where we play, we tend to be more on the M&A advisory side, and as well, we lean in and do due diligence and integrations. So when it gets to those, you know, the heavy lifting around the due diligence, whether it's preparing your data room, helping you even with your pitch decks, all that kind of stuff, writing the right value proposition, positioning the company well, you know, we can do that. We can also do the due diligence, and we also do the integration, which not as many people have that expertise. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that is important is from a seller perspective to think about is valuation and value enhancement. So one thing that, you know, obviously you're going to sell your business for an amount of money. And there are valuation drivers, things that will enhance your valuation. And something that an advisor can do as well is help you increase the valuation. Now, this takes time because you have to make changes. But understanding your valuation today and what it could be worth is really important, because you could be leaving money on the table just by lack of not understanding where those levers are and where those drivers are.
Yeah, I think that's huge. Yeah, for sure. Just like understanding, like, what are the little levers that if you change this by 10%, it might increase valuation by 50%. Or if you know, things like that, where, yeah, for business owners who may not even know even where to start about the value of their business too, it'd be interesting for them to know, is it based on like number of employees? Is it based on revenue? Is it based on EBITDA? Is it based on products, or, you know, all that kind of stuff? So yeah, I think there's huge value there in small business owners learning more about that.
And Eric, you know, one thing, like an analogy that I've used in the past is, it's like selling your house, right? And you know, you've got to fix up a few things just to make it, or right, even stage it, right? and so should you fix the kitchen or should you fix the driveway? Like, what exactly are you going to spend your money and your resources on to fixing? And there's going to be something that's going to get you a greater return, right? And it's no different with your business, right? And so understanding those drivers and focusing on the ones that will give you the biggest return is paramount.
This episode of Small Business Big Insights is brought to you by ZenBooks. ZenBooks is a reimagined full-service online accounting experience. I work at ZenBooks, and we bring a fresh, unique, and modern approach to a very old-fashioned industry. We've been working remotely well before it was cool. And we're a team of advisors, accountants, and payroll professionals that provide ongoing, impactful insights to small business owners and key decision makers. That means that we get into the nitty-gritty of weekly calls with ongoing reporting, bookkeeping, payroll, tax filings, and tax planning. Even if you already have an accountant or a bookkeeper, or you have some accounting staff on your team, you should talk to ZenBooks about the tools and expertise that they have to offer. Check out ZenBooks at zenbooks.ca. Now let's get back to the episode.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's huge. And I guess like some businesses that would be looking for an acquisition, so they're looking to buy a business, and they, I guess, when you start looking at deal flow, what are your options? Like, how do you find these businesses that are, I guess, up for sale, right? Like, you can, you know, I guess there's the brokers, right? But are there other means? Like, do you suggest other means as well? Like, should you be talking to your neighbors and putting out a call out? Or like, how do you find these businesses for your deal flow?
Yeah, there's really two major ways to go about it. One is really a targeted approach, right? So one thing we like to do is, in tell business owners is to sit down and write down, jot down your ecosystem. So think about who are your competitors, who are your suppliers, who are your partners, you know, you're vertically integrated, like, you know, who's in that supply chain, and understand that, because that becomes a data point in terms of trying to understand who would be potential targets for you. It could be people that you have been talking to in the industry, right? So one approach is a very targeted approach. And depending on the type of business, especially if it's niche, you know, doing a call probably makes no sense at all, right? So if you, you know, and there, so, you know, think about your ecosystem, think about your relationships, and then figure out who would be the right targets that for you. Then the second way is just like we've been talking about, is a call. And that's where it's like recruiting, right? Or selling, you know, you put it out on the market. Typically, the broker will send out a teaser, you know, like a one page saying, you know, and does this whet the appetite for somebody? And then if you're more interested, then they have a more fulsome conversation, but then there's a qualification, et cetera. So at a high level, those are really the two ways to go about it.
Okay. And then I guess like whenever you get all these deals, you got to analyze it for all these different variables that are important to your strategy. And then there's always like a price associated with purchasing these businesses. And so how, like, you know, you talked about valuation being something that a lot of business owners need to learn more about for their own business, to know like what their own business is worth, right? So like, how do you think business owners are supposed to know if the purchase price that they're looking at is actually a good deal or not, right? Like how are they supposed to know if like that business should be $500,000 or, you know, $1 million, or, you know, like where do they kind of start to kind of check to see if it's a good deal?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to do is make sure you engage people that know how to do valuation, right? So, so I would start there. So, you know, your M&A advisor, your investment banker, they can do that. But there's, you know, there's a few ways to understand valuation and what the purchase price is. Certainly, if you think back to the house analogy, I mean, there's comparators. So what happened on the market, right? What are the multiples that are going for in other companies, like in your industry? So there's lots of data available on multiples. Typically, the multiple will be on EBITDA, or it'll be on revenue, depending on the type of company, and, you know, and it'll be in a range. The range is really dependent on the strength of your company and like those valuation drivers that we mentioned earlier. The other thing is people do discounted cash flows, right? So the future cash flows of the business, bring it back to present value, understand that. So usually there's multiple ways that it's analyzed. And with all that data, you come up with a price is what happens. But that's where you want to, you know, get advice from your brokers, from your advisors, your accountants, et cetera.
Okay. And then I guess, you know, if we go through this kind of like, I guess, process where we figure out the strategy, we got some deal flow going, we think we found a good deal. Now it's time to do some due diligence. And I guess a good question maybe we could ask is, how much time are you supposed to spend on due diligence, right? Because it feels like you could spend an enormous amount of time, like you could literally like nonstop spend, you know, thousands of hours, or is it like 100 hours, right? Like, so what, like, how do you start with due diligence? And how much time do you think people should invest in their due diligence?
Yeah. So typically the seller, or pardon me, the buyer will drive the due diligence phase. So they're going to come to you and say, I want to see all this information. And they're going to have a list. And those lists are readily available now. I mean, they all have their own, but at the end of the day, they're, you know, there's pretty common elements that go into that. And we typically put that into what we call a data room. So this is something that the buyer, or pardon me, the seller could think about even beforehand, is like starting to prepare a data room. And that's what an advisor or a broker could do as well to help you with that, right? But those are where, and it's really a fulsome look at your company. So you are looking at all aspects, all functions of a company. So all your financial details, all your human resource details, your capital, your contracts, your legal aspects, your governance aspects, your inventory, like you name it, depending on the type of company, your technology, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. Your IP, all those pieces, who your clients are, right? And so the buyer is going to come to you and ask you for all this information. You're going to put it in a central repository, and then they're going to start going through it, and they're going to start asking questions. And what they're doing at this point is trying to understand if there's any, like I mentioned earlier, any red flags. Is there any gotchas, you know, under the hood here that we need to be aware of that is really going to kind of impede this deal? And so the time is really a little bit dependent on the size of company and essentially what you're buying and the complexity of it, right? I've seen due diligence take 2 weeks. I've seen due diligence go on and on and on for months, right? So it really depends. People get fatigue in this phase of it for sure. This phase of the process. And I think the other thing that happens in this phase is people underestimate the amount of work it is. So I don't know if I can put hours to it, Eric, mm-hmm. but it can, it, you know, it's weeks. It's weeks of work typically. And because they underestimate on both, well, particularly on the seller side, they underestimate how much effort it is. One, to get all the data there, and then two, to respond to all these inquiries. It is a very significant distraction. And I think that we didn't talk about this in the mistakes, but this is a bit of a learning for people. I think they're often very surprised how complex or onerous that process is.
Mm-hmm. And you've also alluded to earlier about how, you know, you've gone through a process where you flag these due diligence issues and then they're just ignored, right? So then it's like, wait, what was the point of doing the due diligence if it's just going to get ignored in the first place? Like, so it's interesting to think that even bigger company, like big companies go through that, I'm going to say like emotional or psychological blind spot, you know, of just kind of wanting to move forward regardless of what due diligence says. And it's like, well, why even due diligence then?
Yeah. And I think people maybe genuinely think they can fix it, right? Or overcome that challenge. But they also could have a blind spot, to your point. Or maybe they've made promises to shareholders to stay, you know, to the street. I don't know. Like, there's expectations. So sometimes people make bad decisions, right? Mm-hmm. This is where having a good accountant, a CFO, an advisor, like somebody objective that can keep everybody on track is important. But it happens. People get deal fever for sure.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess within the whole kind of big picture of the industry, what have you seen as being kind of the biggest opportunity in the M&A world right now?
I think it's just a real effective strategic lever for growth. And so companies, when you think about your strategic levers, if you will, this is just one of them. But companies who continually use an M&A strategy to accelerate their growth will be on an accelerated growth curve. So if growth is important to you, and think of public companies and how important that is, that's why M&A becomes very effective. So it's been a pretty popular tool over the last years. So I see it. It really accelerates your growth. It really accelerates your valuation, your company, your market cap. And again, it's a way to acquire close gaps that would be maybe almost impossible to close organically.
Interesting. Yeah. And I mean, just from my own perspective, from within our own kind of clients that we work with, I feel like there's such a huge opportunity from even just there's all these other like reasons to make a purchase than profitability, but just a pure profitability play. I feel like there's a huge opportunity there just because, you know, if we look at the S&P 500, the typical PE ratio of the price to earnings is 30 times the earnings right now, which is absolutely nuts, because that makes it sound like basically if the company makes about 100 grand a year, it would sell for about 3 million. So there's like a 3% return that's expected. Whereas the typical small business, like if we really average it out, is at around 4.5 times EBITDA. So for the same 100 grand, it would cost you 450 grand instead of 3 million for that same profit. So to me, it seems huge that there's just not a lot of liquidity, I guess, within those private businesses that are kind of smaller, that have actually a good ROI from return on investment. And I can certainly see why, you know, as a publicly traded company, if you're getting a valuation of like 30 times your earnings, well, if you buy that smaller business that makes 100 grand per year for 450, well, all of a sudden you got the delta between the 450 and the 3 million. Like that publicly traded company keeps that delta, really. So yeah, there's huge, like I see just from a purely financial side, there's huge benefits. And yeah, just getting into your competitors' kind of regions, or buying out competitors really, or kind of buying out like a supplier so that your supply chain kind of gets completed, so you get security within your supply chain. So yeah, I mean, I've seen some of those, and that seems pretty interesting opportunities right now. Yeah. I think it'd be good to kind of talk a little bit more about you specifically. And so, you know, I think that, you know, buying and selling businesses are a pretty big kind of like emotional roller coaster. And so I don't know, like, how have you managed the stresses and the ups and downs of, I guess, buying and selling businesses?
Well, I think experience goes a long way, like with many things, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the values that we have is that we have been in industry for a long time. And so what we like to say is we have the scars to show it. And so I think experience is a big part of it. But I do think about companies that we've worked with, or I've worked with in the past, that have decided that they're going to embark on an acquisition strategy, and the organization really doesn't understand it. So I think another big piece of this is education. And a good starting point for lots of companies is just to get your corporation or your organization aligned on what is the M&A process. Like we touched on it today, right? Just touched on it. And just getting them all calibrated on what does an M&A process look like? Where do you fit in? How is it going to work? Is just a great, great starting point. And then as you embark into this strategy, then you can surround yourself with the experts that you need to, that can do the really, you know, deep dive and leaning in and helping you along the way. But as a starting point, I think just becoming educated on all the aspects of M&A is really important.
Okay. And I guess for you, how you get involved with a lot of the businesses, we've kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, but what is your team best at when it comes to kind of your involvement, and what's the typical arrangement that your team has with, you know, a company that wants to be acquiring a business? How does that contract even look like? Is it like a monthly fee? Is it hourly rates? Like, how does that look like?
Yeah. And I'm going to break it down a little bit into a buyer and a seller. So,
okay.
So from a sell perspective, we tend to help companies. We work on an advisory perspective. So from a contractual perspective, it's typically either a retainer or a project-based fee, right? But what we will do is we will help sellers develop playbooks. So if you are, particularly companies that are doing this on a repeatable manner, you need to develop a playbook that will help you align your company, help you scale so that you can do multiple acquisitions. So we do a lot of that. The other piece that we do a lot of is the due diligence and the integration. So we can drive that process. We can be the resource for the company to help navigate all that. On on the sell side, where we've done quite a bit of work is helping get companies ready for sale. So, and we touched on this a little bit earlier about valuation and understanding your valuation, but I think this is something that sellers should think about far earlier than they're ready to sell. So one of the principles is start early. So if you want to sell your company, don't wait till 6 months before you want to sell it, or even a year. To me, you start thinking about this 2 or 3 years, 5 years ahead of the game. So what we do a lot of is help get those companies really ready for sale. So that's understanding your valuation, understanding your value proposition, where are the gaps, and where can we enhance your value so that you're ready to sell. Then once you get to the point where you are going out for sale, then we can help you navigate that process, right? So so those are the kind of the two ways that we help groups.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see some value in that. And then I guess from your perspective, like as an individual, what really motivates you to do this? Like what I guess makes you want to do this every day that you come to work?
Yeah, interesting. That's a great question. you know, at a very high level, you know, we really want to just give back to our community, like provide value to business owners through our experiences. So really, that's the purpose of our company of Stratford and why we do what we do. On a personal level, you know, I'm very motivated to see people get results, right? So for me, working with a client, the relationships that you build are just tremendous. Like, and seeing these companies and these people achieve their results and that you had an impact that took them down that path is very rewarding. You know, that's why I do what I do. And then selfishly, by working, I get to see a lot of different companies and a lot of different industries and a lot of different sizes. And so for me, it's just a lot of fun. And just kind of piggybacking on it, I've always said that the M&A is one of the most, if you want to call it fun, is one of the most fun projects that we have. They're challenging, but they're exciting and they're fun and they're very positive, you know. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's definitely like the fun part, right? Like especially in the accounting side, like, you know, we can do a year-end kind of corporate tax return, but whenever there's an M&A deal, people are like, yeah, let's take a look at this. This is fun. I want to see what they could do. And so, yeah, that's really cool. And I guess we're running a little bit out of time here, but it'd be good to kind of hear if there's anything else you think we may have missed or that you think our listeners should know more about.
Yeah, I think just as a business owner, you should understand your valuation. I really think that's an opportunity, like understand your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, the business, like the valuation drivers, like understanding that is, I think, super important so that you're working on the right thing strategically. We can be all very busy on a day-to-day basis, but we're not necessarily working on the right things. And so if you want to achieve your long-term goals, whether it be exit, whether it would be succession to a family member, whatever it is, I think really taking some time to understand that is important. So I think from a business owner, I think that's valuable. I think the other thing is, you know, we could do a whole podcast on integration, honestly. And I just don't, I think there's just a lot of learning still for companies on how to integrate and how to integrate well. And certainly surrounding yourself with people that know about integration is really important.
Okay. And I know you have like some sort of a assessment that sometimes business owners can kind of do. Do you want to tell us more about that?
Sure. And I'd be happy to extend access to that. But we do have a, you know, fairly high level business assessment that people can do relatively easily. It'll give them an estimated valuation. It'll also give you a high level view of where your strengths are and where your gaps are. And it'll also give you relative to your industry. And I think that we'd be happy to, I'll share the link with you, Eric, and you can pass it on. And and people can do that for free of charge.
Awesome. I think that's huge value. Yeah. Thanks. And how do people reach you after the show? How would they get a hold of you? Is it through like LinkedIn or Twitter or email or?
Yeah. So, I mean, we can go to our website, which is www.stratford.group. You can email me, but you can find me on our webpage. My email is colleen.kelly@stratford.group, and you can also find me on LinkedIn. But Kelly is K-E-L-L-E-Y. Sweet. Okay. I'll just say it now, because if you look for the without the E.
Yeah, that's me. Someone else. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much. This is great. I think there's huge value in our conversation today. I very much appreciate your time on this. I think everyone's going to very much appreciate what you've shared with us today. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Eric.
This episode is brought to you in part by Humani HR. At Humani HR, they provide both fractional HR support and consulting services to small and medium-sized businesses of all industries. Your dedicated, seasoned HR professional provides custom HR support on demand and scales with your needs. They're more than just a strategic advisor. They actually do the work, so you can focus on building your business. Visit their website at humanihr.com to have a free consultation and find out more about their services. That's humanihr.com. You'll also find the link in our show notes.